Okay, we still had a few verses from lesson 9 to complete. This is on page 129. The verses under passage 3. Okay, who would like to take these? Okay, let us just start with your room. Yamalokan. It's short A. Yama, not Yama. Yamalokancha.
Yamalokancha.
Yeah.
Imang sadeva kan.
Yeah.
Hawaiian means who.
Yeah.
And iman is this.
Yeah.
Tata means is the accusative for tata vi.
Yeah.
Means the earth element.
Wait, here just the earth.
Just the earth.
Yeah. Earth element would be patavi datu. Yeah, but here it's not datu, it's just the earth. Is a,
just
a,
yeah,
the earth.
Vijayasati is a third person singular future tense.
Yeah.
For wind conquered.
Yeah.
Yamalokancha would be Yamalokancha.
Yeah. Yeah, Yama is like the Lord of Death.
The King. Lord of Death.
Yeah. The what?
Yen
Luo Wang. Yen Luo Wang, yeah.
Again, this, the Deva
Kang. Yeah.
Means together with Deva, the Deva world.
Yeah.
So I guess it's a question, who conquers the earth, this earth?
Yeah. Yeah.
This world of the Deva world.
Well, it's actually who will conquer this earth, this Yamaloka, this world of the Lord of Death, to get Sudeva Kang. You see, Su means together with.
Together.
So when you add Su to a word, it becomes, in effect, functioning like an adjective in relation to another noun. So you see, the word deva gets transformed into an adjective by adding ka to it. Deva ka. That means relating to the devas. And sa means together with. I have to say the idea here is a little obscure. Okay, this world of Yama. Yama is the world of the Lord of Death. But that seems to be referring now to the human world, maybe in the sense that it's the human world is under the sway, under the control of the Lord of Death. Together with the Deva. I think I see the sense now. That it's this, the Yamaloka is actually the world of all living beings, including the devas. So the whole world is seen as under the sway of Yama, the Lord of Death.
Are they all accusative? So who will come?
Except ko is nominative.
Yeah, but who will?
Yeah.
Right? Who will conquer this earth?
Yeah.
This world of all living beings, including the devas.
Yeah, that's the way I would understand the sense. Well, sa has a sense of together with. It's more the sense together with. this world of living beings, or this world under the sway of death, together with the devas, with the gods.
Well taught.
It's originally a past participle,
right,
but now it functions as an adjective in describing Dhamma Padang here.
Kusalo means skillful.
Here, skillful, yeah. Here, skillful.
Skillful, not skillful one?
Oh, skillful one, yeah, a skillful person.
A skillful person. Pupam Eva, I think it's Pupam plus Eva.
Right.
Like flower.
Like, yeah.
Like flower.
Yeah.
Pachesati,
yeah,
would be the third person future tense for Pachesi, the gathers, will gather.
Yeah.
My translation is, who is the well-taught, skillful one who will gather in the world of righteousness?
Where is the world of righteousness?
Dhammapada.
You said world of righteousness.
Yeah, world of righteousness. No,
no, not world. He has word of righteousness in the glossary. You were reading word or world?
World.
No, it's word.
My own title.
Yeah.
Probably my title.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So the well told word of righteousness.
Yeah.
All right. So I should say, who will gather the word of righteousness? The well-taught word of righteousness.
Yeah.
So where do I put kusalo? That's a nomenclature. Then I have call, but it's a nomenclature.
Yeah. But you have to say kusalo belongs to the line that has Eva in it.
Like the skillful one?
Yeah.
They gather flower like the skillful one?
Okay. Maybe I have to translate for you. Okay. Again, they're difficult verses. I don't know why they use such difficult verses for a beginning textbook, but...
May I try it one more time?
Go ahead.
Who is the well-taught, skillful one?
Beep.
Okay, sorry.
Okay. You have to see, Sudesitang is ending. What kind of ending is that? It's accusative ending.
Yeah,
right, yeah. So it can't go along with ko. Yeah.
Sorry. Who will gather?
Yeah.
Who will gather flower like skillful one?
No. Okay, let's go back to me. Okay. The thing is, you see, there's no verb in the third line, which is what makes it difficult. So who, the only thing one could suppose is that the verb from the fourth line also projects forward to the third line. Though if you take it literally, it doesn't quite make sense. Who will gather? And pachesati is an unusual, it's a special future tense of the verb is pachinati, which means to gather, to collect. Okay, so who will collect the well-taught word of Dhamma as a skillful one will collect flowers. And here, pupa, pupang, it's a singular, but it's used in the sense of a plural. I think you would have to say flowers. Okay, so do the next verse, because that just answers the questions posed in the first verse.
Seiko tatavin vijayati yamalo yamalo kancha iman sadevata.
Yeah.
The seiko is one in training.
Right. Together with the Devas.
Together with the Devas.
Yeah.
Seiko Dhammapadam Sudesikam Kustalo Sukhamiva Pachesati. It will be the one in training will gather the well-taught word of Dhamma.
Yeah.
Like the skillful one
Okay. Any questions on these verses?
Not after you explain them.
Yeah, but they're quite hard, I have to say. Even the idea of the verb vijayati. I mean, they're very unusual verbs. Let's see what the book says. Vijayati. Yeah, jati. Chinati. Yeah, the more usual form is means conqueror or victorious one. But here we also have an alternative. We could have either one. Jinati or Jati. I think Jinati is more common. Then sometimes you have the prefix V, which just intensifies it. So then from Vijayati, then gives future Vijayati. Go ahead.
The verb roots in a Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's one column where it says either one or two of these have a copy. I thought I had my copy. Right. And this second column, it says C-O-N period. I guess it means consonant, C-O-N. And then it will give either one or Roman numeral 7, Roman numeral 4.
Right.
Roman numeral 5. What does that mean?
I don't have the chart in front of me, but I assume, are the numbers between 1 and 7?
Yes.
Okay, there are 7 sort of families of verbs in Pali. There are conjugations. Yeah, they're called conjugations. So in this book. Yeah, they haven't actually formally introduced the verb... different groups of verbs. My idea actually would be, I don't know what you would think about this, then going from this book to water and going through water's book.
But I don't think this is necessary to really, I think it's another name only.
The classes of verbs?
Right.
We've actually had several of the classes of verbs. We haven't had them explained systematically. But the main classes are the most common, I think it's called one, is like okay, the very normal regular verb of the types, let's say, to cook. From the root, you just add a to form the stem. Pacha, then you add the terminations to the stem directly, pachati. That's one class. I don't actually remember. Then there's another class we've had, like, that forms the stem by adding e. This would be like dis plus e to form desethi. I think this might be 7. Number 7. There's another class you add from the stem. Na. If I see the table, then I could know at a glance what the different classes are. But I think it might not be to really get the grammar down solidly and yet not go so boring as to go back to those very elementary grammar books. You get the water book. The first lessons maybe we'll go through very quickly, but we'll be very familiar. Water's grammatical explanations are sometimes rather dense, but it could be just useful to get more fuller grammatical explanations, and it will give a chance to like review the basic grammatical points.
I think it will help us memorize the verb. I mean, I'm trying to memorize different words, and I realize that they actually belong to different families,
yeah,
they're actually rules to follow. So if we understand the rules, it will help us a lot. That is my personal feeling.
And this is rule. Each one, seven.
Right. I want to, and I also would like to learn more about compounds. How to recognize
the compounds.
The compounds.
Yeah. I noticed this book doesn't explain types of compounds.
Right.
There are certain important points not explained in this book.
Sometimes I find I can interpret it one way or the other without knowing the rules. I couldn't make.
And sometimes when you know the rules, you still don't. That's why one of the functions of commentaries, the useful things in the commentaries, is that they do explain how to interpret compounds. Not that one always has to agree with them, but also sometimes the commentary will explain that one could take the compound in this way, or one could take it in that way. Oh, I see. Yeah, the second class of verbs you insert in to go from the root to the stem, you insert an N into the root. For example, bead, which means to break. to get the stem, you put an N in. And then you add the A, Binda. To form Bindati. Or Bhuj, which means to eat. But to explain all the class, I won't go into the explanation of the classes of verbs now. Then it becomes rough.
Right.
We spend the whole lesson on that, and we don't continue with the book.
Right. Maybe in the future.
Yeah. The problem with Waters' book, the reason why, well, his grammatical explanations are, again, they're pretty dense. And then he takes these long passages from the Digha Nikaya, where you get many words which occur only in these passages. These particular passages, they don't occur elsewhere. And also the passages that he takes from the Digha Nikaya, they're not so much concerned with the pith or essence of the Buddha's teaching, but a lot of them are concerned with what you would call Indian legends that were incorporated into early Buddhist teachings. A lot of some stories, anecdotes, arguments between the Buddha and the Brahmins. So it's not of primary interest from the standpoint of Dhamma. Whereas this book takes a lot of short suttas from, especially from Anguttara Nikaya, which are more interesting. And the vocabulary, it includes more words which are found very frequently in the text. Okay, so let us go on with the next verse. Maybe Wen Jun, you take this. Pain upamang. Yeah. 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 Abhisambuddhano. Yeah.
Like
form. Right.
Kayamimama. This body. Yeah. Vidhi kava and realize no.
Yeah.
Jaran, right. Having realized this body like
the form. Having realized that this body is like form. Yeah.
Marichi Dhamma.
Yeah.
The nature of the mirage.
Right.
Abhisambuddhano.
Yeah.
One who understands.
Yeah, actually this is a present participle form, so the sense would be understanding.
Understanding.
Yeah. Understanding.
Nature of the mirage.
Yeah, but it's understanding that. In brackets, understanding that it, the body, has the nature of a mirage. Yeah.
Continue?
Yeah, continue.
Chetapana.
Yeah.
Maharasa. Papu Pakani.
Yeah. Papu, let's see. Papu Pakani. Papu Pakani. Yeah.
Adasana. Machu Guajata.
Yeah.
Kache.
Right.
Chitabana. Heading Kata.
Yeah.
Marata.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eros.
Yeah, that's the way it's interpreted.
Sensual passion?
Well, that's what it signifies. Mara versus Marasa, that's the genitive of Mara. Mara is, you know, the evil one, the tempter. And Papukani, yeah, Mara, it's, yeah, the personification of death, the lord of death. And Papukani, it comes from pupa. Pupa is the key word, which means flower. This P-U-P-P-H-A. Then this form Papukang is interpreted to mean flowery arrows. Yeah. One may go out of sight of the king of death. Here the word dasanang. Dasana means seeing. One meaning of it is seeing. And so adasanang means not seeing. And so here it means, you could say more freely, it's out of range of sight of the king of death. Okay, so put the whole, all the lines together. Okay. Having understood that this body is similar to foam, realizing that it has the nature of a mirage, having cut off the flowery arrows of Mara, one may go out of sight of the king of death. And the last verse, maybe Wait Jung, you try that. Pandita. Mani. Pandita Mani. Yeah. That he is. Idiocy. Or foolishness, we would say.
Then, for this reason, he is indeed a wise man.
Yeah.
A fool who thinks himself wise.
Yeah. Yeah, but survey, the vei has, it's an emphatic.
Indeed.
Yeah, like he is called a fool indeed. Or he is really called a fool. So the point is that if a fool recognizes that he's foolish, then to that, you say, to that extent, he's wise, a wise man. But if the fool thinks he's a wise man, then he is really a fool. Yeah, good.
What is the function of tena?
Tena is by that, in the sense of by that much, because of that. Because he recognizes or he realizes that he's a fool.
But it goes with Eva?
Pandito Eva Appi Tena, so. Okay, which that fool who manyati, who knows or recognizes his foolishness, by that or because of that, he is a wise person. Or you could put the uppi, even by that much, he is a wise person. Then the third line, the ch and, really has a sense of but. But the fool who thinks or conceives, imagines he is wise, he indeed is called a fool. Any questions? No questions. Okay, let us go to lesson 10. And we courageously enter upon the desert of grammatical explanations. Okay, genitive, absolute. Okay, in lesson 8 we had an explanation of the locative absolute. Now absolute constructions also occur in the genitive. Okay, now what is an absolute construction? Okay, in English we have a very easy way to make a statement. Did you catch who that was for? You know, sometimes he say Bodhifashir Tianwa.
Sounded like
Let me just I ask him always to repeat the call twice. Okay, an absolute construction. It's a way of indicating that one action is going on at the same time as the main action of the sentence. But in the secondary action, there's a different subject from the subject of the main action. Okay. While Bhante was teaching Pali, Guo Qing Shi was announcing a phone call. Okay, so in English we make absolute constructions. We don't have absolute constructions, but we accomplish the same function by having a subordinate clause. We indicate it with the word while, when two actions are taking place at the same time. okay. It seems to understand Pali grammar also has to understand English grammar. Okay, this we call in English the subordinate clause. Subordinate or secondary clause. This is the main clause. And we indicate that this is subordinate by using the word while. So this action is taking place, while this action is taking place, this action is taking place. While X does Y, A does B. And we can also have, this is one way to do it, this is when two actions are taking place at the same time. It might also be the case that one action is completed before another takes place. So, in this case, after Mom made okay, so we indicate a sequence by the word after. After X did Y, A did B. Okay, now the way this idea is expressed in Pali is by using an absolute construction. And there are two kinds of absolute constructions. One is called locative absolute, which we had in lesson 8. In the locative absolute, the subject and any words that qualify the subject, including present participle, past participle, adjectives describing the subject, are all put in the locative case. But the main subject of the sentence will be in the nominative case. And that's the subject that goes with the verb of the sentence. The other type of absolute is the genitive absolute, in which in the subordinate clause, the subject and all words describing the subject, present participle, past participle, adjectives, are all put in the genitive case. I wish they gave more examples. They only give one example. We'll take that example. And this is one using a past participle. Achira pakantasa bhagavato ayang katta udapadi. Okay, achira means not long or soon. Pakanta is a past participle meaning left. Departed. And pakanta is put in the genitive. It becomes pakantasa. And it's qualifying the Buddha, the Blessed One, Bhagavato. Bhagavato is also genitive. And then the subject of the sentence is ayankata, this conversation. And the verb is udapadi, arose. So here, soon after the Blessed One left, and that whole clause is in genitive, and it's an absolute, called the genitive absolute. Soon after the Blessed One left, ayankata udapadi, this conversation arose. The subject is ayankata, this conversation, and the verb udapadi. Yeah, I see they have some examples of this in the reading passage. Maybe we could just take another example on page 133. That's the first page of the lesson. In section 2, the second paragraph, second line, Ranyo tita majanti ke rukamulang pavitasa tida chida chaya sarirang pari. Okay, Ranyo is a genitive form of Raja, which means king. Okay, tita majantike rukamulang pavitasa. And pavitasa, four words down, is a past participle of pavisati, which means to enter. And then the two words in between describe what he entered. He entered when the king entered the foot of a tree, tita majantike, which means at the middle of the day. It's the middle of the day. Yeah, at noon, the middle of the day. Chida chaya sarirang pari, the shadow of the hole or the opening. Pervaded or extended upon his body. So, okay. First, one action takes place. The king enters the foot of a tree at the middle of the day. Then the main action takes place. The shadow of the opening falls upon or pervades his body. So whenever you come across genitive constructions which seem to be subordinate to a main action in the sentence, consider that as a genitive absolute construction and try to interpret it in that way.
What is the difference between genitive absolute and locative
absolute? I think they can be used alternatively. There's really no fixed defining difference between them. I can't think of any.
Okay.
It's just the two seem to have arisen just as alternative ways of handling the same situation. perhaps there's a tendency for genitive absolute to be used more often for two actions taking place at the same time, and the locative absolute to be used more often when one action is completed after another, when one action is completed before another takes place. But don't take this to be, I'm just guessing that this seems to be a difference in frequency of usage. But I don't think that there's a fixed rule restricting one to the other. Okay, now when we come across more examples of the genitive absolute, then I'll point them out. But keep your eye open for them. Okay, in two, sati and santi as locative, in locative absolutes. Okay, there are two locative forms of the present participle for the verb atti. This is a very irregular verb, so it has two sati and santi. So in the locative absolute, sati is most often used, but santi does appear when the sense is impersonal. That is, when the absolute has no specific subject, either expressed or implied. It occurs very often in this expression, evang santi, which means, in such a case. Okay, now, section three. The main point here is that when you want to describe a sequence of actions in Pali, first I went to the store, then I bought a carton of milk, then I started to walk home, then I met a friend on the way, then we got into his car, then we went to the park, then we had a conversation. Then he drove me back home, then I took out the key, then I opened the door, then I went into my apartment, then I sat down on the couch. Okay, in English we just make everything, I did this, I did that, I did this, I did that. In Pali, as also in Sanskrit, when you want to have a long descriptive sequence of a series of actions, you use this gerund form. Having gone to the store, having bought a carton of milk, having gone outside, having met my friend, having gotten to his car, having gone to the park, having had a conversation, having driven with him to my home, having taken out my key, having opened the front door, having come into the apartment, having put the bag down on the table, I sat down on the couch.
The very last verb would not be
gerund. The very last verb is a normal verb. What they call it, a finite verb.
But whenever we have more than one gerund, it always implies a sequence?
Yeah, when you have a sequence of actions, the way this will be expressed in Pali is through a series, the actions will be linked together by the use of the gerund. Having done this, having done this, having done this.
So if we want to say something, the two actions simultaneously, we would use locative elements.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is just like what happened in lesson 9.
Yeah, yeah. And when you have the gerund, then it's the same subject doing all of the actions, whereas the point of the lock of the absolute constructions is the subordinate clause has a different subject than the subject of the main clause.
And we can never have the same subject doing two actions at the same time, as is possible.
No, one can be doing two things at the same time. Then you would say, no, I think the way to do this would be you would use a present participle. The subject, okay, you would have the subject, present participle describing one action and a finite verb describing another action. Let's see. So, make a simple sentence. So bojanang bunjanto tasa mitena sadding katesi. While eating food, he had a conversation with his friend. So bojanang bunjanto. Bunjanto is present participle. And katesi, he spoke with his friend. The verb for to speak is a finite verb. So bojanang bunjanto potakang olokesi. While eating food, he read the book. Okay, so take the example here. Eka iti putan adaya mukadovana ataya panditasa pokaraning gantva putang nahapetva atano sanake nisidapetva mukang dovitva nahatung otari. Okay, one woman, having taken her son, having gone to the pond of the wise man for the purpose of washing her face, having put her son down, having bathed her son, having made him sit down on her own garment, having washed her face, she entered to bathe.
I couldn't find the word
sanake. Sanake is garment.
Garment.
Yeah, atano sanake. No, it's a locative singular. Because she made him, she put him down on her garment, on her own garment.
And then how about Nahutang? I also couldn't find that word.
Nahutang is infinitive of Nahati, to bathe. Nahati, to bathe. I'm sure it's in the glossary. Nahayati, to bathe, on page 189. But this is just an example to show how actions are chained together. Yeah. Okay, let us go on. Okay, a present, this is section 4 now, a present or past participle with its appropriate objects, adverbs, etc., may modify a preceding or a following noun. This participle and the noun will agree in number, case, and gender, and the construction may have the sense of an English relative clause, particularly when the participle follows the noun. Thus, reason 3. Okay, they give this example. Sila sampanno puriso. Okay, the basic point here, let's see. a present or past participle may modify a preceding or a following noun. Okay, in this example, sila sampanno puriso. The noun is puriso, which means a man. And the man is being described as one endowed with virtue. And so we take the compound sila, which means virtue, and the past participle sampanno, endowed with. And the two join together, it becomes a description of the man, a man with virtue. This is very similar in Chinese. You have the way of using this de to form adjectival descriptions. Let's see. You could say Ying Wan Shu Kanda Haize. Okay, the child who Ying Wan Shu Kanda Haize, right? The child who read the English book. Kan Ying Wan Shu Shu Da Haize. You wouldn't say Ying Wan Shu Kan Ying Wan Shu Da Haize. That's because I'm looking at Pali, so my sense of sequence is getting mixed up. Yeah. Kan Ying Wan Shu Da Haize. Okay, you use the de there to make it an adjectival compound describing the child. Okay, so in Pali, you do a similar thing, except here the noun in the compound, the noun generally precedes the participle.
What is this different from what we have learned before? We've been doing this all along.
Yeah, we've had examples of this all along. Yeah, I think they're just maybe pointing it out as a point in grammar.
Okay.
But we've actually had many examples of this.
We learned back in lesson 3.
Yeah, one of the early lessons.
Right.
Even the first lesson we had examples of this. Like the second example here is from lesson 1. Chitang dantang mahato ataya sangvatati. Okay, here the subject is citta, the mind, but you use the past participle dantang, and it becomes a descriptive phrase. The mind which is tamed leads to great benefit. Okay, then the next page. A participle may also follow the object of a verb with a meaning like see. A participle may also follow the object of a verb with a meaning like see or hear to form the equivalent of an English construction like I saw him going or I saw him seated there. For example, anandang or anandang gacchantang adasama. Here the object is the monk Ananda, and the present participle gacchantang describes his action. And then there's no subject mentioned. The subject is implicit in the verb adasama, which is the aorist past form of we saw. So we saw Ananda while he was going. While he was walking. For the next example, Bhagavantang ekang rukasa mule nisinang dispa. Having seen the Blessed One, that's the Buddha, having seen the Blessed One doing what? Nisinang, that's the past tense, seated. seated at the root of a tree. Ekang, actually this would mean alone, having seen the Blessed One seated alone at the root of a tree. Yeah. And that's all accusative case. Yeah, Bhagavan Tang Ekang Nisinang. Yeah.
A participle form?
That's a past participle. Yeah.
Okay. We've done this before.
Yeah, we've had these examples like this before. Mm-hmm. But they just, the authors didn't explain the grammar that's involved.
So it wouldn't be seeing the Blessed One seated, it would be having seen the Blessed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, having seen is more accurate than seeing. Then the next example indicates the problem that you presented just before you rung. How do you describe a person doing an action, doing two actions at the same time? Here, Daruni Pakipanto Jalesi. Daruni are pieces of firewood. Pakipanto is the present participle of throwing. And Jalesi means he kindled a fire. So throwing pieces of firewood, he kindled the fire. You say, there must be a subject, which, because this is just a fragment from a sentence. So there must be a subject, maybe so, or maybe it says Brahmano, the Brahman.
So isn't Jalesi a second person?
Well, Jalesi can be, it's past.
Oh, the past?
It's the aorist, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, okay.
So it could be the second or third person.
Okay.
Singular aorist. Okay, now we'll go to the future participle in Nia. I mean, there's not much to explain here. It's just that the suffix Nia is one of the ways, or this, yeah, Nia is one of the suffixes used to form the future passive participle, the optative participle. What should be done, what might be done, what can be done. So pujaniya, that which should be worshipped, what is worthy of worship. Karaniya, what should be done. Bhojaniya, what should be eaten. Khadaniya, also what should be eaten. Though it takes on the meaning of a type of food. We'll come across examples of this. Okay, causative verbs. Okay, from many normal verbs, ordinary verbs, one can form a causative verb by strengthening the stem and then by forming determination by using E instead of A, either E or AP, long APE. For example, well, I have an example here, authority. Authority means to descend, to enter. So you strengthen authority, you strengthen it. See, if the stem has an A, short A, you strengthen it by turning it into a long A. Ah, turns into ah. An I gets strengthened by turning into an E. A U gets strengthened by turning into an O. Authority to descend, to enter, becomes causative, to cause to descend, to cause to enter. Otareti. That is to lower, to put down, to send down. Or say, Bunjati from the root Buj. You strengthen the U by turning it into an O. And then you use the E to form the causative, to cause to eat, in other words, to feed. Another good one, Prabhatati. To occur. Here, for some reason, we don't strengthen this. I think because there are two T's, so it can strengthen it. It's already strong because of the two T's. But one changes this to an E to make pavateti. So pavateti means to occur, to take place. Pavateti, to cause to take place, to start, to initiate. Kaisha, maybe.
Why would you think that the pavatati, the first A, or the middle A, should be strengthened? I know it's not, but why in the beginning would you were thinking?
Because the general rule is that one would strengthen the vowel of the stem of the ordinary verb, but you can't get it in Pali. You can't get that because it's too strong. Because you have two T's, that's already a strong syllable. And so you'll never get a long vowel and two consonants in the same syllable. I'm trying to think of an example with I. Okay, so one way to do this is simply by strengthening the vowel of the stem, then adding the E, or changing the A of the stem to an E. Another way is by adding this P-E. Where is this mentioned? Okay, this is given in the book from Ahariti to bring. Okay, then APE. Another example, currency.
currently. The root kar, you could form in two ways. Karati. Karoti means to do, to make. Karati, to cause to do. Or you can also make it karapeti. Alternative ways, karapeti.
Number two,
yeah.
Do we need the long R on the
tatiki? No, it's short.
It's short?
Yeah. It seems that it normally, I don't know why it's short, but it's short, but it seems according to the rules it should be long. But I don't know why, but it always occurs short. There's not a printing mistake. And I pointed out last week that you're adding the P and E suffix not to the verb stems, but to the roots. You know the difference between a verb root and a stem?
No.
The root is like the original, almost is like the seed from which the verb develops. The stem is the way you're about to form the inflections of the verb before you add the terminations. So, for example, I think for the verb to do, kar would be the root. Then the stem for the normal present indicative would be kuro, and into this one adds si, kuro si, kuro mi. Sometimes there's significant difference. For example, the root is gum, to go, but to form the stem it becomes gacha. Then you add the terminations gacchati or gacchami. Gacchasi, gacchati, and so on. So in these examples under number two here, with titati, you add this T-E ending to ta, the root ta. And for some reason, I don't understand, you get, instead of ta-peti, you get tup-peti. For the verb to give, dati or didati, the root is da, d-longe. And so that gives us da-be, ta-da-peti, to cause to give. A short A for the root. No, you see that the dati, that's one of the verb classes, the conjugation classes, in which you duplicate the root. It's a rather irregular type of verb. But the root for to give is da, simply D long A. So to that da, you add apeti. And sometimes you add the upe ending to the present step. To the present stem, nisidati, you get, nisidati means to sit. Nisidapeti means to cause to sit, to invite someone to a seat. Vadati is to speak. Vadapeti is to make someone speak. Vadati could also give vadeti. Yeah, they mentioned that just below. Vadeti, which also means to make somebody speak. Also here they give the example of karoti. You get karapeti and kareti, both meaning to make somebody do something. This paragraph, most commonly, if the verb from which the causative forms is intransitive, that is, it doesn't take an object, then the causative form is transitive. Okay, so let's take an intransitive form. Okay, I think authority to descend is intransitive. One descends into the river, but it doesn't take a direct object. But when you make it a causative, otareti, then it takes a direct object. You put the, he put a stone into the river. He made a stone, a rock, descend into the river. So pasanan, so nadiyan pasanan otareti. He dropped the stone into the river. So here, otareti takes a direct object. Okay, if the basic verb is transitive, that is one which takes an object, then the causative often means to get someone to do something. I wish I would give an example of this.
How about bring something?
To bring aharapeti. Okay, that's a good example. Okay, aharati, the ordinary verb, to bring, but it needs an object. Okay, he brought the book, so potakam oharati. So maihang potakam oharati, he brought me the book. Gahapati purisang potakam aharapeti. Okay, the gentleman had his servant bring the book. So here there are two objects. Okay, let's say gahapati, householder.
No, they're both accusative. Okay. Let's make it safety, a rich man. Okay, the rich man, aharapeti, ordered to bring to me, mama santike, to my presence. He had the purisan. Purisan normally means man, but it also has a sense of servant, his servant. So he had his servant bring the book, potakam, to me. So there are two direct objects here. Two accusatives.
And aharapeti is considered intransitive verb, even though it takes...
No, it's definitely transitive. It's in a way double transitive. Now we're taking the case where a normally transitive verb. Okay, let's see the sentence. Most commonly, if the verb from which the causative formed is intransitive, the causative form is transitive. And if the basic verb is transitive, that's the case we're taking. Aharati is transitive.
Right.
He brought me the book.
Okay.
So, brings the book. The verb takes the direct object.
If the basic verb is transitive, the causative means to get someone to do it.
Yeah. So here, the sense is aharapeti, the rich man, orders the servant to bring the book to me. I'm not sure actually of the sequence, it might be. I'm not sure which one would come first. But the point basically is that you use that form, but that form aharapeti, this sort of this double strong causative, has a sense of getting somebody to do something. And then they point out that there are numerous exceptions, that these are not hard and fixed rules, like the verb pukosapeti, which means literally to call somebody, to get somebody to call another person. It can also mean simply to call somebody to come, like it's the original verb pukosati, to call. Let's take a rather gory example. Marati, given at the bottom here, marati means one dies. Then mareti means to kill, to cause to die. So one person mareti another, one person kills another directly. He commits murder with his own hand. But marapeti, that's the double causative. That's you cause somebody else to kill somebody. In other words, you like commission a murder. You don't need an infinitive because what's indicated by infinitive in English is already implicit in the verb marapeti, to cause to kill. You don't have to say any. There's no need.
That's the double transitive.
Yeah. Well, causation already implies the idea of an infinitive. Okay, now we come to the seven pre and post positions. Okay, what is a preposition? This is an indeclinable form which precedes a particular noun and then forms a compound together with that noun, and that compound takes on a special sense. So the examples given here, anto means within, inside. Gama means village. So anto gamang pavisati, he enters into the village. You could really express the same idea by saying simply gamang pavisati. He enters the village. But also just idiomatically, one says, antogamang pavisati, he enters into the village. I think it's a little bit similar, like in Chinese you could say, ta zai tushuguan kan shu, or ta zai tushuguan li zai shu, correct? Wait. Ta zai tushuguan li kan shu. The li, you could either retain it or delete it. You get the same sense. What?
The Chinese part.
In relation to the Pali?
Uh-huh.
Well, I couldn't call Xuanzang and Tusita Devaloka to get some advice. Xuanzang? Xuanzang. They don't have telephones up there. The Thai also. Sawan.
Mm.
Sensawan. No, I said they don't. No, I said Xuanzang. No, Xuanzang is the famous translator of Sanskrit text into Chinese. Chinese, a Tripitaka master. No, but it's just pretty obvious that even in English we have things like this. Well, I don't know. He's in the library reading books. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Anto nivesana gatto. Nivesana is the residence or house. So, one who is gone inside the house. Anto nagare viharanti. Nagare is city, and viharanti is live. And so they live within the cities. They live within the city. Well, I think we should try to finish this grammar section. Okay, then something called postposition. This is an indeclinable form that comes after the noun or after the word that it, the noun that it qualifies. That it has its own sense. Okay, like originally I think that they were decline forms, but then they take on this special meaning. Like pitaya means from now on, or from this time on, beginning with. And it usually goes with the ablative. Ajito pataya, from today onwards. Ito pataya, from this time onwards. I think you could say. To think of some other examples. Okay, Nisaya.
Before it comes Nisaya, Ito is an ablative form?
Ito is an ablative, just of a little particle E, which means the sense of this. So Ito is from this, in other words, from now. Nisaya means because of, on account of, and it takes the accusative. Example, idam kamang nisaya, because of this action. Danang nisaya, because of the wealth, the money. And heta, another postposition, goes with genitive, rukasa heta, beneath the tree. But also, heta can also function as a preposition. Hetam Manchang, beneath the bed. Okay, then repeating a word gives a distributive sense, like tata tata means all over, here and there, this place, that place, yata yata, wherever. Think again in Chinese, you have jong jong, many kind of various kinds, yang yang, different types. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's done with the past participle, ichi, ichi, tani. Here, whatever things were desired. Then in commentarial Pali, and we have some examples of that in the stories that I'll give, this word adi, originally it meant beginning, or adini, that's the neuter plural form, takes on the meaning of etc. So, for example, in the commentaries, when they are explaining something about the five aggregates, they'll say, rupadini, say, that is, with regard to material form, etc. Then you understand that they're referring about all five aggregates, or sometimes, chaku adini, that's the eye, etc. So you understand that they're referring to eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. Or say they're talking about the four satipatthanas, they might say kayadi, kayadi satipatthana, the foundation of mindfulness of the body, etc. It can also come in the middle of a compound. But the form adini you would get at the end, like here, hati rupa kadini, images of elephants, etc. Then you could understand images of elephants from the context, cows, horses, tigers, maybe as decorations in a building. Or Kasi Gorakhadini. Maybe the text is enumerating types of livelihood. Kasi is cultivation, agriculture. Goraka literally means protecting cows, or raising cattle. I think we'll find some examples. I'll point out examples in the reading passage. Okay, 10, Sandhi. When a form beginning in U follows one ending in O, I'm sorry, when a form beginning in U follows one ending in A, the result may be O. That is, the U will turn into an O, particularly when they are closely joined in a compound. Thus you have unha plus udaka becomes unhodaka, warm water. The A and the U meet and they become transformed into O. There may be other examples. Okay, let's see this katapunyo. Really, their explanation is so dense that one has difficulty making sense of it. Susie?
Advanced, quite advanced
students. Yeah. Well, I think the basic point, okay, is simply that you can use this past participle kata preceding another noun to form a compound that functions as an adjective in relation to some other noun. Okay, katapunyo, let's say katapunyo puriso, the man who has done meritorious deeds before.
Okay, kata means done. Punya is merit. We could have puriso, a man. So this compound, kata punyo, will become function as an adjective describing the man.
Would you say, 做父的贤相? Would that make sense? Fu is merit. 做父的贤相? 做父的人? 做父的人? One who has done merit. Okay, so it's the same, basically the same thing.
But I was wondering, what is different from anything else?
That we've had already? I think we've had cases of this before already.
Is this a special kind of compound?
It seems to be, I think it belongs to the same class as the two-car garage compound.
I would think so, but then punno, is that the original form?
No, you see, punya would, I think, be, by itself, it would be a neuter noun, punyang. But now it's describing a man. So it becomes, now it's a masculine ending, kata punyo. If it's a woman,
then it becomes kata punya. Another example is with Bipa Puba, is it? Yeah, I remember a passage. Okay. Dita means seen. Puba means before. Okay. To make it negative, you put Adita Puba, not seen before. I remember a text where somebody is describing a person who he's had a friendship with through correspondence. So he's called, he calls the other person, he says he's my Adita Pubang Mitang, the friend not seen before.
This wouldn't be Pabu Bihi, right? Because Dita is past participle serving as an adjective, same as Kapta. Wouldn't Babu be two nouns?
I don't think it's necessarily nouns. I'd have to check the explanation of it.
Okay.
It could be any compound which is functioning as an adjective in relation to another noun.
Would be Babu
be? I think so.
Okay.
Would this be Mayo Kanda Pungyo? Would that make sense? Mei qian guo.
Guo meaning it's past participle.
Jian
guo. It's done. I have not seen
it before. Mei jian, I see. Mei jian guo de peng you.
He said it doesn't make sense. Somebody you haven't seen before, it shouldn't be a friend.
No, well, this is the case of two people who have... Well, now people have... Like through email, they never see the person, but even in ancient times there was correspondence, and so somehow people came into contact through correspondence and they became friends.
Yeah. Like this.
Yeah.
You have to say, 没见过面, I've never seen your
face. I've never seen the face, I see. 没见过面的朋友. Wow, we've come to the end. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, so next week we can get into the fun.